every Christmas, I get excited about just a bunch of things. And as a child and as a youth, I grew up watching TV and enjoying loads of different Christmas specials that were going on. I mean, it ranged from Bob Hope to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer to anything Christmassy, and my family was all in. Well, one of the things that I just appreciated completely was the 1969 Rankin-Bass Christmas special entitled Frosty the Snowman. And so I thought it would be kind of fun to focus our attention on some of the characters from that special. And so the first one that I wanted to talk to, and obviously at some point we're going to get spiritual, we're going to talk about some tie-ins that I see as I think about this, but we're just going to do a little midweek Advent special as we work through Frosty the Snowman together. But this first character is named Hocus Pocus, and he is a white rabbit that was in this special, Frosty the Snowman. Now, he's a rabbit that was used in Professor Hinkle's magic act, but the relationship is shown to be rather adversarial. And Hocus refuses to come out of Hinkle's magic hat when told to do so, and he ruins Hinkle's performance and his reputation. And he leaps out of the hat when it's convenient for him, and he starts making his way into town. And as he makes his way into town, he escapes with the hat, and he swaps it for a wreath, and he brings it to Frosty. Now, he, along with this girl named Karen, then accompany Frosty on his journey to the North Pole. And along the way, Frosty warns that while he and Hocus can survive in the backcountry, Karen cannot, and they need to get her back to civilization. So Hocus, in pantomime, suggests that Frosty call the Marines and the President, both of which Frosty declines on before they come to an agreement by recruiting the help of Santa Claus. Well, listen to how Hocus tries to communicate to the forest animals on building a fire so that Karen will be okay.
Then suddenly they came upon a tiny glen, which seemed almost magical. For it was Christmas Eve, and the woodland animals were all decorating for their big celebration. They knew Santa was to come that night, and they wanted everything to be just right.
Hocus, speak to the animals. See if they want to all pitch in and build a fire for Karen.
The animals were delighted to help. So they found a spot away from the glen where the fire wouldn't catch on to the tree. Soon there was a spark, and in almost no time, a splendid fire was crackling away.
And so, because Hocus takes the time in the woods there to communicate, he makes it possible for Karen to be okay. So while Frosty takes care of Karen, Hocus waits for Santa. And when he arrives, Hocus explains everything to him, and they return to where Hocus last saw Frosty and Karen, following Frosty's tracks from there to a greenhouse that Hinkle had trapped him in. Hocus and Santa enter to find, to their shock, Frosty melted and a heartbroken Karen crying over his demise. After Santa restores Frosty to his inanimate snowman form via a cold December wind, Hocus arrives with a magic hat to revive him, only to seek Karen for protection when Hinkle appears to demand his hat back once more. After Santa convinces Hinkle to repent and write his apologies repeatedly to receive a gift of forgiveness on Christmas morning, Hocus remains with Santa and Karen to celebrate Frosty's revival. And in the end credits, Hocus is seen at the side of a redeemed Hinkle as he marches alongside Frosty and his friends, which implies he and the magician have reconciled, and Hocus serves as the rabbit in Hinkle's magic tricks again. Well, I know that that sounds childlike, and it's because it's a childlike story. But I want you to focus on something today as we think about Christmas, and a story that is obviously very famous from the Bible is when we get to Matthew 2, verse 2, there's a lot said in this verse. What has happened is, so Jesus is born in Bethlehem, and Herod is king, and wise men came from the east to Jerusalem. Verse 2 says this, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east." And so I want to tell you that regardless of how many Christmas movies you've seen or how many nativity scenes you might have, there's no reason to believe that there is only three wise men. There may have been 300. There's no way to know for sure. We do know, however, that they came from the east. And so when I was thinking about Hocus, I thought of the whole idea of magic. And so we don't know where they exactly came from. But we know that these magi were astrologers studying the stars to determine the future. They were also interpreters of dreams. And so if you look at the word magi, you see it's the beginning of the word magic. And they were likely to have been residing in the area of Babylon when they saw a star and followed it, believing it to be the sign of the coming king of the Jews. What made them think this to be true? Well, it's probably due to another man who resided in Babylon 500 years earlier to this time, who was also an interpreter of dreams. And his name was Daniel. And in the seventh chapter of the book that bears his name, Daniel wrote that one would come called the Ancient of Days to rule and reign upon the earth, and that he would have everlasting dominion. In fact, Daniel gave the very date this one would ride into Jerusalem. So these wise men, these magi, were most likely very familiar with Daniel's writings and his prophecies and his teachings. And no doubt they're watching for the Ancient of Days to appear. So isn't it great the way the Lord appears to people wherever they're at? The magi studied the stars, and the Lord said, "Okay, I'll speak to them in the stars and reveal to them the true star, the star of Jacob, as Balaam declared him to be in Numbers 24:17. Because the magi were into astrology, God used stars to draw them to the sun. And so the second part of the verse says, "and are come to worship him." So notice the magi weren't coming to get something from Jesus. After all, he's only a baby. He's a toddler there in Bethlehem. Now, nor were they coming because of what he had done for them. For at that point, he'd done nothing. They came to worship him solely because of who he was. So let me ask you today, do you ever come to church saying, "Lord, I'm going to worship you because I've got this business deal coming down next week and I need your help," or "I'm feeling depressed and I know if I worship, I'll get high emotionally and I'll get high spiritually"? There are indeed blessings to be found in worship, but that shouldn't be our motivation to worship. Why should we worship the Lord? Here's why. Because he's the King of Kings. He's the creator of all life. He's the reason for life, the destiny of life. And he's the smitten rock, the Alpha and the Omega, the lily of the valley, the fairest of 10,000, the bright and morning star. And an understanding of who Jesus is should be motivation enough for us to worship him. For truly, you are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power. Revelation 4:11.